On the under $3 menu at McDonald's, the sausage burrito is $2. So dip, drizzle, or douse to your heart's desire. Because no matter how you sauce your sausage burrito, it's still just $2 with McValue.
Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher for delivery.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Little Fish, the podcast. Yeah, I know, I'm changing the vowels. The podcast spin-off show where we read out some of the best facts that you guys have sent us, which are almost all fantastic. My name is Anna Toshinsky, and I'm here with my esteemed colleagues, James Harkin and Andrew Hunter-Murray. Hi, guys.
Hi.
Hi, Anna. I've got a fact here from Danica Edmondson, who says, the man who made the first drink for the first men on the moon was taught to make cocktails by the first woman to fly solo from England to Australia.
Four.
Lot to unpack.
Yeah.
The man who made cocktails for the first men on the moon.
The first cocktails for the first men on the moon.
I didn't know the men on the moon had cocktails. That feels like a luxury.
Well, it was when they came back. It was the first thing when they came back, apparently.
Was it? Is that what you
In the 60s, you wouldn't put it past them to say, well, we're going to need a functioning cocktail bar on Apollo 11. We, you know, like, the guys need to relax. They certainly need someone to smoke.
There's no point in having a disco ball if we're not going to have the cocktails as well. So this was made by a barman from the Savoy called Joe Gilmore, and he would make lots of cocktails for different people. So he made the Churchill cocktail for Winston Churchill, for instance. So he created the Moonwalk, which was Grand Marnier, grapefruit juice, a bit of rose water and champagne, and then sent it to America. And then when the guys landed, it was the first thing they drank. Okay. So that's quite a cool connection. But Joe went to work in a bar in London before he got to the Savoy, and someone turned up and ordered a dry martini. He didn't know what to do. He did his best, but didn't make a very good dry martini. And so the lady who ordered it came round and taught him how to make a dry martini. And he was so inspired by that day, he decided to go on and become a great bartender, one of the best in history.
Wow.
And the woman who showed him what to do was Amy Johnson.
Love it.
The famous aviatrix.
Yes.
And so, yeah, isn't that a great connection that Danica sent
us? Unbelievable.
And Danica said, I've always found this story amazing, but I might be a bit biased as he is my grandfather.
Yes.
Oh, you've buried the lead.
Bring it home.
Well, I couldn't put the lead at the top, could I? So this is a fact about someone's famous grandfather.
Sounds nepotistic, that.
That's a really good fact.
And do we know if Amy was also inspired by that moment to become a famous aviatrix? Did she think?
She already was.
She was. This was in the 40s, I think. So she will have already, it would have been a while since she did her.
She would have not had long to live.
Yeah.
Because I the other weekend cycled past her memorial.
Did you?
In Herne Bay, I think.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Well, and what does it say, like, here died Amy Johnson from
just
choking on a martini?
That's
an olive, yeah.
She flew her plane, I think she crashed into the sea around there, off there.
Yeah, she did.
I sometimes mix her up with Amelia Earhart, who was maybe eaten by crabs. But Amy Johnson was not eaten by crabs.
No. Nor was Amelia Earhart, really. But closer to being true.
I don't think we know exactly what happened to Amelia Earhart, do we?
I thought she was married to Elvis somewhere.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
They both moved to Panama.
All right, here's a fact. This is from Dan Parry. Dan writes, I'm a filmmaker, and I was recently inspired by a supercut that came up in my feed of every time the Coronation Street cast said London in a shocked way. You might have seen this. It's a really good one.
I've not seen that, but I can imagine it.
Yeah.
Ken's gone down to London for the weekend.
London! Except they're not from the West Country because it's Coronation. It's set up north, isn't it?
London?
Yeah. Where is Corrie set?
Manchester.
Manchester. Okay. And so there's this supercut of all the times, and it's really funny that they say it because it's like, like that. It got me wondering what other phrases in media are used repeatedly. And of course, there's I have a bad feeling about this.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So using a clip database of film, TV and adverts, I searched for the phrase from the first time that it said, there's a Star Wars film where it props up very famously. Mm-hmm. And it came back with a lot of results. Assuming each clip is around 3 seconds, and including paraphrasing, a supercut of this would last 2,077,464 seconds, or 24 days.
Oh, no. I got a bad feeling about this. Are you going to play it now?
I'm going to play something else Dan has sent in.
Oh.
A different supercut. Dan says, that supercut might be a tad more work than I'm prepared to do. So instead, treat yourself to a supercut I've made of every time Andy says moss over the past 5 years.
Oh,
good.
Are you ready?
So ready.
Moss, 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 go moss, 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 moss. Moss, 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 moss. There's nothing moss can't do.
So good. I like how sometimes you can hear us groaning a little bit in the background.
Yeah. Anyway, thank you, Dan.
Yeah, really good.
Thanks, great work. Dan.
Maybe spend your time differently next time. I've got one here from Robert Taylor, and this is about someone called Hippolyte Mergemouriez. Ring any bells, guys?
No.
He invented margarine, but...
Oh, I did. I have heard of them.
You will have, you will have heard of them.
Yeah, in a competition. Right?
Yes, he won lots of awards. He won an award from Napoleon III. That's well done. Awesome. Not the most famous Napoleon, but still. But before he was
second most famous, though.
Second most famous, yeah. Before he was famous for the invention of margarine, he was famous for creating a method to make 14% more bread from the same amount of raw materials.
That's clever.
And Robert Taylor, yeah.
That seems, I mean, there's a certain thing called the laws of thermodynamics that seems to...
I'm going to come in with bubbles.
Oh, yeah.
Like, if you're only measuring the outer bread volume...
Or did he invent the bagel?
You can't be only... What you mean? So if I've scooped out all the inside of a loaf of bread like I used to do on the way back from the shops as a kid, that's still the same amount of bread that I'm claiming.
Okay, some questions, Your Honour. But what a demented little child you were.
I've got another question.
Yeah.
Did he invent the larger loaf of bread in order to sell more margarine? Because that really would make good. Perfect sense.
That's
wouldn't it?
So
they're looking
good.
At a big graph of sales. Sales are down. What can we do?
Guys, I've got an idea. Big bread.
Literally. He invented a better milling process for grains, apparently, which does make sort of sense, right? So I think Robert Taylor is slightly hazy on the details, but he said it's possible he basically invented whole grain bread, but don't quote me on that. But next time you have toast and margarine, you can double toast to Hippolyte.
I've got a fact here from Amanda from Arkansas. And Amanda tells us that North Dakota and South Dakota were established as states on the same day, which is November the 2nd, 1889. But because there was such a heated rivalry between the states, Benjamin Harrison shuffled the paperwork so that no one knew which he signed first. Therefore, there is no record of which was signed first, and North Dakota and South Dakota are number 39 and 40. But it's not that one is 39 and one is 40.
Brilliant.
I didn't know the states were numbered.
They're quite often like, we're the number one state.
Yeah.
Or we were the 49th state. Or They do care about that quite a lot.
How hilarious.
But in actual fact, usually North Dakota is called the 39th state because of alphabetical order. Usually.
Oh, yeah, you can't win. You can't beat that.
But yeah, I thought, you know what, to me, it sounded like a big old myth that... Do you not think?
Shuffling the papers.
Sounds made up, doesn't it? But it does seem like there were contemporary reports that they were definitely signed with no one knowing which was first. But whether he shuffled them or whether someone else just gave them to him and he signed them without looking at them, we're not really sure. But basically, the North and South just didn't like each other.
It's weird to have a big rivalry before you even exist. You're there, you're poised, ready to hate each other.
Because it was the Dakota, it was like the Dakota Territory, right?
Yeah.
It was one area, but they decided to call it North and South Dakota because the South thought that the North was just run by wild folks, cattle ranchers, fur traders. They just thought that these people are not good enough, so we don't want to be in the same state as them.
Wow. Yeah.
Should have made it one state, and then they all would have had to be friends.
That's how it works.
That's how statehood works.
Yeah. Do you want another?
Yeah.
This one comes in from Frederick Howard, and it's about a man, a Swedish man, called Peter Gunnarsson.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Who emigrated from Gothenburg, where we've been.
Yes.
In the year 1639.
We weren't there then.
We weren't there then. And he went to the USA, and he named himself, he gave himself a new name after a hill in Gothenburg, where his the old country, right? Mm-hmm. And the hill was called Ramberget. And this guy became Peter Gunnarsson Rambo, okay? Mm-hmm. He had also brought some apple seeds with him. This is the most Grandpa Simpson way I could tell this story. I'm so sorry. This guy, Peter Gunnison, he named the apple variant after himself, Rambo. Mm-hmm. So Rambo was an apple, right?
Right.
And then, years and years later, what's 3 centuries later, the author David Morrell was looking for a strong name for a protagonist for his novel, First Blood, and he was given a Rambo apple by his wife, and he liked the sound of the name.
Imagine if he got given a Pink Lady. That would have been a very different film. Or a Granny Smith.
Stallone could have carried it off. Yeah.
So that's amazing.
I know. That's where Rambo comes from. It comes from this guy, and it comes from this apple, and it comes from this hill.
It doesn't come from Arthur Rambo,
the poet.
The poet, no. Famously played by Leonardo DiCaprio in one of his early roles.
Oh, okay.
Get you.
I actually know his entire oeuvre from when I was obsessed with him. Yeah, if you ever want to know any of it.
It is very interesting, your pop culture references, which are sparse and few.
Thank you.
But they include Leonardo DiCaprio, Friends, and Mambo Number 5. It's pretty much it.
I don't think you need anything else, do
you? It was as if there was a year after which you just checked out of everything. It's probably around the turn of the millennium. I don't know what happened that made you think, you know what, I'm out.
It was a big party. I took some things I shouldn't have, and my memory ends
there.
It's
just blown your mind. That's so funny.
That is incredible. What a great fact.
Yeah.
I loved this from Alan Morrison, which is that the woman who designed the modern kitchen had never cooked.
Beautiful.
And this is because I loved learning about this woman who I'd never heard of, Marguerite Schutte-Lahotsky, and what she designed as the built-in kitchen. She lived to be 103.
Wow.
So she invented the kitchen in 1926. She didn't die till the year 2000, the year that my pop culture knowledge ends.
Coincidence.
On her 100th birthday, she was interviewed, and this is when she revealed that she'd never cooked. She said that her mother always cooked at home, and then she said that when she left home, she just went to the restaurant or the pub to eat.
Wow.
So she said, I designed the kitchen as an architect, not as a housewife.
That's right, so she was an architect, and she got the gig of designing. She just decided to? Well, she can't have been commissioned by anyone to say, we need to sort out this kitchen thing.
Sorry, she went to the pub every night for dinner. I mean, I know your point was very important, Andy, but...
Let's do yours.
Utterly mad.
So she says...
Did she live next to a Wetherspoons or something?
I think she must have, because I'm not sure she was particularly loaded. But it was a different time.
Well, there was a thing of fewer people having kitchens, wasn't there? Today, there are big bits of the world where just everyone goes out to eat because places like Hong Kong have a much bigger dining out culture because homes are small and you naturally, you might not
there's
have
like
a kitchen.
Like food carts as well, where you just everyone goes.
Yeah, you get street food, cheaper food. She named one specific pub, actually, but I can't remember what it was called. So she was obviously a regular there. She must have got very bored of the menu. I hope it was extensive, but she designed
I'll have the full English again. And 2 pints of Ruddles.
Extraordinary that she lived to 100 with her diet, to be honest.
On the under $3 menu at McDonald's, the sausage burrito is $2. So dip, drizzle, or douse to your heart's desire. Because no matter how you sauce your sausage burrito, it's still just $2 with McValue.
Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher for delivery.
Stephen Cochran tells us that in 2018, an anonymous testicle checking booth debuted in New Zealand.
Brilliant.
To check for that you've got them?
You got to check them.
You
do have to check them, Anna.
Got to check them.
You might have a lump. You might have something turning up.
It's exactly that. And it's that they thought that maybe Kiwi men would be a bit embarrassed to go and see their doctor and, you know, whop them out onto the table. And so instead, there's a little booth and you would go in and, you know, like, you know, like if you go to the seaside and you put your head it was like one of those, but upside down so that you would just put your...
Fantastic.
Your mum takes a photo.
The image is like a bowl of kiwi fruits, but then you put your testicles in. But yeah, it's a really good idea, I think.
That's really nice.
I mean, anything to get people to check themselves is useful, right?
I would feel more embarrassed clearly going to the big center of town anonymous testicle checking booth because everyone can see you going in there.
They probably don't put the sign up outside in big neon writing.
Well, they should do.
They probably put like, you know, local library or something so you can go in. Going to the library.
You go to the library a lot. You've been 4 or 5 times this week. What's going on?
Why are you not wearing any trousers?
I know you're reading Winnie the Pooh and enjoying it, but...
Why would you go 4 or 5 times a week to the testicle checker?
Well, it's sometimes
I
nice.
I think you've misunderstood.
It's nice.
Just check one more time.
It's to me, you know, for a bit of company.
No, sure, some human contacts.
Exactly.
Okay, whatever you need to get you through the day, Andy.
Oh dear, that's a good fact.
No, well, it's a very good thing for people to do.
Absolutely.
I'm sure we've only made Kiwi people feel more comfortable about doing it with this conversation.
Was that, you said when you put them through, there's a picture of a bowl of kiwi fruits on the other side. Is that because it was in kiwi? It was New Zealand thing.
Well, it was also that testicles might look like kiwi fruits. Absolutely. So it worked on two levels.
I was trying to think of other pictures they would work in.
Okay, go on.
I think there's a bowl of potatoes or something on the table at the Last Supper.
Oh, yeah.
But I think that's probably a bit sacrilegious.
I was thinking of one of those, is he called Archimbolo? He's like an artist that does like faces, but they're all vegetables and stuff.
Oh, that's,
you know,
good.
That guy?
But you'd have to paint them for that.
Yeah.
It'd be very, you'd need to camouflage them somehow. Purple, I suppose, plums. Anyway.
Yeah, sorted.
Here's one from Andrew Wilmot. Came across this today and was surprised to discover this unexpected eponym in the bagging area. So I'm telling you up front. Mm-hmm. This is a name-related thing.
Great.
Why is gas called gas?
Come on. Oh. It's just a very old word for wind or something.
Petrol, gasoline. Mm-hmm. Why is it called gasoline?
After Cassell or something?
There was a guy called John Cassell who invented gasoline, and it got degraded to gasoline. Now, I went on a bit of a rabbit hole on this because if you read the surface level, dictionaries do not support this etymology, says Wikipedia.
Oh, really?
And then you go to the OED, the gold standard, and it says, it seems possible that it was from Kazaline, which he sold in 1862. And then by 1864, a rival merchant had changed it to gasoline. And I just think that clip, surely that's gasoline to gasoline. I mean, that.
I think we might have touched on this on QI, and I think we fell on the angle of it being true, I think.
I think it seems likely.
That's so good, because it's always been so confusing. And you did mispronounce it at the start, which is why we were confused, of course. It's why is gas called gas?
Gas.
Because
gas, I thought you were talking about gas as in the state of matter.
Our gas. British gas.
Sorry, British
not
gas.
British not gas. British gas.
Not yeah. British gas, though.
That is sold as a liquid, the stuff here, yeah.
English gas.
I mean,
gas.
It is confusing, because when you say you burn gas, like in a boiler or whatever, that is a liquid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Gas boiler,
it's
I suppose,
all badly
yeah.
named, yeah.
It is, it's
petrol
confusing.
Is gas, which is a liquid. That doesn't... Oh,
we should go back to calling it Cas.
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 Casoline.
Gasoline.
Yeah, okay, I'm down.
Great.
So let's start it. Let's make it happen.
When you drive into the petrol station next time and you shout at the guy in the booth, I'd like some gasoline, please. Come out and look lively. What do you mean you're not allowed to leave the booth? I've got a crisp half crown here for you, young man.
It's a testicle guy again. Just don't serve him. He'll go away. Okay, that's probably enough for this week, isn't it? Everyone had enough? Well, great facts, one and all. And I think it's time now to bestow some facts. Mm. So we have some facts that we've mentioned on the podcast before. We're going to give them to some very special fact custodians to look after for the rest of their lives. Has anyone got one to kick us off?
All right, here's one. And this one goes to Amir Sokolovsky. And Amir, your fact is Napoleon loved roast chickens so much that his household chefs were constantly cooking some in case he wanted any. Constantly cooking some roast chicken.
Those battles must have smelled delicious.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why we kept the war going. Yeah. Just for that delicious smell.
Delish.
So wasteful. Yeah. How much chicken was chucked away?
Yes, there is a story about Sarah Ferguson, the Duchess of York, doing exactly this sort of thing, I'm afraid, in the new book about her and Prince Andrew.
Really?
Basically, it sounds like there's a whole roast pig on the sideboard every night, and they will have some crisps and then leave the roast pig on the sideboard.
Oh my
it's
God.
Not good.
Isn't it? There's a story that King Prince Charles used to like get 10 boiled eggs every morning and then choose which one was cooked the best.
I have heard
that. I think that might not be true.
It feels like it can't be true. It feels too good to be true. Yeah.
How can you tell which one's cooked the best before you've opened it?
Well, you have to open them all up.
He opens them up, I see.
You have a little guillotine. Well, no, that's probably a sore subject.
With Napoleon, did he have someone who was carving it all the time as well, or did he just pull the bone apart himself?
Strong.
Didn't see it coming. Didn't see it coming. Walked
knew
right
something was
that.
Coming. Yeah. You see the look in his eyes, you think there's danger ahead. Lovely. James,
okay,
you got one?
Yes, I do. This one now is under the custodianship of Paul Sanders. And it is the fact that IMDb was originally just a list of actresses with beautiful eyes.
Oh, what was creepy?
Yeah, I think that's creepy.
I mean, everyone's got beautiful eyes, haven't they?
Have they?
What? You think everyone's got beautiful eyes?
Well, I think it's a nice thing you can say to someone. You've got beautiful eyes.
But that just means that half the time you're lying.
No, I think it's very hard to get an... What am I trying to say? Hang on.
No, I like it that you think everyone's got beautiful
eyes.
Wait
a minute. Got lovely eyes,
so that means that when you told me yesterday that I had beautiful eyes, that doesn't mean anything because you think everyone's got beautiful eyes.
I was only saying that so you'd feel my testicles in the booth. I'm sorry.
I think he wasn't creepy. I remember this guy. And also, it's not like beautiful breasts, is it? You know, it's kind of innocent compared to what happened to the internet afterwards. And it was on a little intranet, wasn't it?
Yes. Didn't you find, aren't you on feet.com or something?
WikiFeet is,
haven't
it?
Certainly right. haven't put myself on
Why do you
WikiFeet?
Know it's called WikiFeet?
Because it's a meme. It comes up all the time in jokes and stuff. Okay.
Suspicious.
What?
You put them up there.
Put them up where? Oh,
this is getting out of control. Andy, how do you keep it under control?
It's very difficult, isn't it? Yeah.
Okay, another one. This is for Alan McCormack. And this is that the word fascinate literally means the embodiment of the divine phallus.
Oh,
this was always one of my favourites because fascinate felt like such a QI fish word. We do stuff that's fascinating and it's just all about penises. And this is because it comes from fascinum in Latin, doesn't it? A phallic-shaped holy amulet.
I didn't remember that.
Very nice. Should we have another?
Yes.
Let's have another.
This goes out to Shiv Taylor, and it's that the 2015 French Scrabble champion, Nigel Richards, doesn't speak a word of French. He must know oui and non, but basically he doesn't speak French. That's the thing.
Yeah.
And didn't speak French. And I think he's won more languages because he just memorizes the word lists
for
these things. He's good at maths, not French. And if you're good at Scrabble... If you're really good at Scrabble, you have to be quite good at maths. I think that's it, isn't it?
Maths? Or like just like memorizing?
Memorizing and also logic, like where to put things. You know?
Yeah, that's
like
it.
Not putting a word down which opens up something to your opponent is quite an important part of it.
Although you have to be able to double and triple stuff for the triple word scores. So
surely at the highest level, someone's doing that for you.
No, you've got to do it yourself. And if you fuck it up, you're disqualified straight away.
Okay, I've got one more here. Mm-hmm. This one is now under the custodianship of Caitlin Partridge. Caitlin, your fact is that the world's only venomous frogs headbutt their enemies to death.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, really.
Sort of raises the question why they're venomous if they're so good at headbutting things.
No, as in the venom is in their head.
Oh! Okay.
It's not like, you know what, I'm going to headbutt you and if this doesn't work, I'm going to get you with the venom.
Okay. The venom's in their heads?
I think so, yeah.
Wow.
Spike on their head. Like a unicorn.
Yes.
Are unicorns venomous? Nobody knows.
The really interesting thing about those venomous frogs is like the really tiny ones. They're like really colourful and you see them in zoos and stuff. Mm-hmm. Right? And then the sign says this is the world's most venomous animal or whatever. But in actual fact, that frog is not venomous at all. And it can headbutt you as much as it likes, but you'll be absolutely fine. And that's because they get the venom from what they eat. And when they're in zoos, they don't eat the venomous stuff. The ones in the zoos are absolutely fine. There's nothing wrong with them.
Oh, my God.
Isn't that interesting?
That's a really good...
It's a really good thing to say to people when you're in a zoo.
The staff and stuff. I bet that's really annoying.
I don't
for
say
them.
It to the staff. I say it to the people who come with me. And the thing is, like, because I am so tedious, it's always a different person. I never go to the zoo with the same person twice.
No, I can imagine. You never get to go anywhere with the same person twice, do you?
Just this podcast every week when you guys turn up.
Also, that thing of a venomous frog that's not venomous because it hasn't eaten the thing feels like absolutely classic Jonathan Creek to me. Like that would be the way someone would die in a Jonathan Creek. And it turns out that the zookeeper had been, or someone at the zoo had been feeding the frog the venomous stuff so it would kill the person.
Yeah.
And the mystery was that then they tested the thing and it wasn't venomous.
Yeah, but exactly.
Yeah, okay. I can see that it needs work, but it's a good start.
So for the reboot...
I've never watched Jonathan Creek, I'm sorry to say.
It's not that kind of thing at all.
Is it not? I believe it's really good. I've
Like, I think it's yeah. good. I mean, I've only seen a few, but it is that kind of thing. It's convoluted murders, and Jonathan Creek's clever.
Is he a magician or something?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a magician who lives in a windmill.
Yeah, it is. It's fantastic. It's the best thing Alan Davies has ever done. No, it is absolutely fantastic. It's so satisfying and clever. How about another fact then?
Yep.
So this is a fact. I'm going to start with the fact this time, and then I'll say who we're giving it to. The fact is that the larger Pacific striped octopus catches its prey by sneaking up behind it and tapping it on the shoulder. And that fact is for Anton Delbar. Anton Delbar, there you go. A sneaky octopus. So cool. And this was, I think this is one of mine from back in the day, and it's that it taps it on the opposite shoulder to the shoulder it's on, because octopuses have quite long arms, don't they?
Beautiful.
So it reaches around, taps it, and the thing thinks something's coming from the other direction and runs straight into the octopus's mouth.
It's very clever.
Oh, how embarrassing.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're like an idiot.
Here's one that goes out to Sophie Williamson. Sophie, your fact is that defunct sports from the early 20th century include archery, golf, boxing on horseback, and competitive flagpole setting. Yes. I love that.
We almost have to specify that written down archery, golf is hyphenated. Otherwise, it did almost sound like you said archery, golf.
That's a good point. It's archers and golfers competing for the same hole.
Yeah.
So you go to wherever you fired or hit the ball to, and then you get to have your next stroke / shot from there.
Is it? And is it equally difficult?
I don't know. I'll defer to James on this.
Mm-hmm. Well, I find golf a lot easier. That's mostly because I've played golf many thousands of times in my life and I've done archery once.
And you caught your wrist, didn't you?
No, I caught my nipple.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah.
I was when we played, because it was with me. I'd forgotten you caught your nipple. You still managed to beat me.
Did I?
Damn you. Maybe that's the trick. I forgot to catch my nipple on the way.
I don't know. I wonder if the archer's allowed to fire at the golf ball or vice versa to try and knock your opponent out of the way.
It's a fun idea. And we talked a lot about flagpole setting, which is a really fun competitive sport.
Yes, what? And sort of has a great history, doesn't it? Because it's the Stylites,
everywhere.
Those people who sat on poles for
thousands
hundreds
of
years.
Great pedigree. They weren't doing it for the sport, but they were doing it for the Enlightenment. But, I mean, the effect is the same.
What's the skillful part of this sport?
Not falling off.
Really? It's all about balance.
It's got to be partly about
Must
balance.
Must be.
Hasn't it? Coming down for a pack of crisps. I mean, there are all sorts of...
Oh, no, he's come down. He's come down for a pack of crisps. For the third time this season, he's come down for a pack of crisps. And again, Andrew Hunter-Murray, I'm afraid, has lost in the first round of the flagpole sitting competition.
Oh.
Oh, it's embarrassing. It's Monster Munch as well. I don't believe it.
I look over at the stand where my sponsors are looking absolutely furious. We've paid this guy £2 million.
And you're sponsored by Hula Hoops.
Okay, very good. All right, James,
final one for the day is for Jelka Ludolfi. And Jelka, your fact is that the first ever pencils were used to draw on sheep.
Beautiful.
From Andy's famous trip, I believe.
The Keswick Pencil Museum.
And that's all we got time for, Anna, no! I think.
Please, let's not get back to reminiscences. We'll never get away.
Such a good place.
Yeah.
And you've been there as well, James.
Oh, yeah.
And
but I used to live up there.
I made a special trip, to be fair.
Why wouldn't you?
It was a time of personal crisis, which I don't like to go into now. But it was a very bright spot amid the gloom.
Yeah, I'm sure.
That
how
was
could
the Honesta slate mine. Two absolutely standout days.
Hang on. Did the slate go to the pencil museum? Did you go and see where it started and then where it ends?
Do you know what? They haven't worked that together, and they should do, because that's a much better... That would be a whole day out, wouldn't it?
I mean, that's a PR coup for them.
I mean, they're both a whole day out in and of themselves, but yeah.
Yeah, but you could, like, for people who go up for the weekend, you could get, like, a double ticket.
Absolutely.
Saturday at the pencil museum, Sunday at the slate museum.
Two for one. Yeah. It's a dream come true.
It is
for any honeymooner.
Yeah.
Lovely. Okay, well, should we wrap up there?
Yes.
Okay, well, thank you so much for listening, and that's all of the facts that you've sent us for this week, and hope you enjoy the facts that we've bestowed upon you. Of course, if you want to send us some more facts to potentially be read out on the next or a future Little Fish, write to podcast@qi.com. Andy will filter through them all. He'll get rid of the crap and he will choose your great fact for us to read out on the next episode. And if you want to listen to No Such Thing as a Fish, the big show, Big Fish, then please come back again in a few days' time. And failing that, we'll see you here on Little Fish again next week.
Can I just say, if your fact hasn't been read out yet, it's not because it's crap, necessarily.
Not necessarily.
It might be that we just haven't got to it yet.
Just keep listening and find out.
Exactly.
But if it hasn't been read out in like 5 years' time and you've already sent it, then give up. maybe. Or maybe just send again. Andy might have missed it.
Thank you.
Okay.
Well, I feel like you've given everyone's egos a real boost today, Anna.
That's what I'm here for. Yeah. Okay. Over and out.